Hey, everybody. Today on the Charlie Kirk Show, one of the best conversations we've ever had with a man who is now the most popular podcast guest in history. He did an interview with Joe Rogan, and it has, according to him, the most downloads of any episode Joe Rogan has ever done. Dr. Peter McCullough around vaccines, the Nuremberg Code, early intervention. It's amazing. And as you guys know, we have always been on top of a pro-science approach, a pro-human approach to COVID. We believe our public health authorities have failed us all and have lied. We really believe that Fauci and the CDC and NIH have done a huge disservice to humanity. Dr. Peter McCullough is here to help us unpack all of that. And you could support Dr. McCullough by going to GiveSendGo and going to Dr. McCullough's page on there. If you want to support our show, The Charlie Kirk Show, as we dive deeper into these ideas and these issues, and if you've been blessed at all by The Charlie Kirk Show, go to charliekirk.com/support and please consider supporting us. Lori from North Carolina, thank you. Catherine from Alabama, thank you. Deborah from California, thank you. Mickey from Missouri, thank you. I want to thank Jackie from California for your wonderful support. Sarah from Maryland. Lisa from Washington, Angela from Maine, Robert from New York, Kyle from Pennsylvania, Terrence from Connecticut, Patricia from Arizona, Jeff from California, Charles from Arizona, Debbie from Mississippi, Bradley from Michigan, Kelly from Rhode Island, Justin from Colorado, Kayla from Louisiana, and Matt from Mississippi. CharlieKirk.com/support. Thank you, thank you, thank you. As this year comes to a close, please consider supporting us. We're very thankful. If you want to get involved with Turning Point USA, start a high school or a college chapter today, tpusa.com. That is tpusa.com. Check it out today. I think you'll really enjoy it. It's tpusa.com. Start a high school chapter, start a college chapter today. Email us directly, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. That's freedom@charliekirk.com. And if you want to support our show, charliekirk.com/support. Dr. McCullough is here. One other thing. Consider sending this episode to your friends. Consider sending it to your friends and consider texting this around. There's a lot of information and there's a lot of insight that happens here in this show. It's really important. So please consider sending this episode to your friends, texting it. And if you're not yet subscribed on the Charlie Kirk Show podcast, please consider doing that. Many podcasters and other content creators took this week off. They just kind of take it easy. We are on our 610th podcast of this year. And if you want to help us do even more next year, please go to the charliekirk.com/support page and help us out and make sure you're subscribed. Okay, buckle up, everybody. Dr. Peter McCullough is here. He will blow your mind. Vaccines, early intervention. He believes that a big number of deaths could have been prevented. One of the great crimes ever enacted against humanity. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Hey, everybody. This episode is brought to you by my friends at ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN.com/Charlie. Secure your device, anonymize your online activity, protect your action online. ExpressVPN.com/Charlie. Help our show out by also helping yourself protect yourself. ExpressVPN.com/Charlie. Hey, everybody. Welcome to this episode of the Charlie Kirk Show. Honored, truly, to have with us today someone that I consider to be the captain of the A-team of Team Reality, someone that I've looked up to throughout this last year, Dr. Peter McCullough. And instead of me doing his bio for him, I'll let him introduce himself to all of you. Doctor, thank you so much for joining the Charlie Kirk Show.
Thanks, Charlie. Thanks for having me. So I'm Dr. Peter McCullough, and it's a great pleasure to join the show. I'm busy treating COVID patients. I'm a practicing internist and cardiologist. And like all good internists and medical specialists, I treat COVID patients because it's the biggest problem that we have right now in medicine. And I am a board certified in both specialties. I spend about half my time in practice and then half my time in research. I'm an author and editor and clinical researcher. I'm a frequent news commentator. I provide my commentary both in written and in verbal, as well as a screen presentation. So I was on the news, national news, 3 times yesterday for national audiences. And so I'm one of the few doctors that you'll see on TV or on the internet that actually sees patients that is actually published on COVID-19. And my advice has been relied upon by the U.S. Senate, multiple House Senate, many courts around the nation. And I'm considered in my field, I'm considered one of the most published people in academic medicine. I have over 650 peer-reviewed publications in the literature, very high H index, meaning my papers have had big impact. And in COVID-19, we need all the expertise we can, because it's all about exchanging scientific ideas to help guide us out of this crisis.
Well, that's terrific. And the medical industrial complex has done everything they possibly can to try and silence you. And I have found your writings and your findings to be so helpful to myself and to my family. Talk about what you've been finding, especially in the last couple of weeks when it comes to Omicron. People, you know, you go to the NIH website, and basically when you really read it carefully, if someone were to get COVID and is not vaccinated, basically the NIH website says, go home and just wait till the symptoms get bad enough and go to the hospital. What have you found to be – talk about the importance of early intervention and early treatments. So I really believe in some ways we have a pandemic of the untreated.
It's true. I one time, just to put this in a vignette, I was giving a public program in West Texas, and one of the public directors showed up. And this was in the summertime. And, I finished my presentation, just giving the data on treatment, he made the comment. He said, well, I want to say that 85% of people in the hospital are unvaccinated. And I said, well, how many of these people received monoclonal antibodies, the treatment you're responsible for as a public health director? He says, well, I don't know that. I said, well, you know, vaccines don't treat the problem. It's pretty obvious. The monoclonal antibodies do. Why don't you know how many people receive monoclonal antibodies? Well, let me tell you, I've looked at the literature. Of people hospitalized, it's basically a function of people not getting treatment. The vast majority of people hospitalized and those who die get little or no early treatment. That's the issue, not the vaccines, not masks or hand sanitizer. It's actually about people receiving treatment. If we didn't treat people for pneumococcal pneumonia, they'd end up in the hospital. If we didn't treat people early for influenza, they'd all end up in the hospital. If we didn't treat people for chlamydial and mycoplasmal pneumonia, the theme should be pretty clear here. For acute respiratory infections, they must be treated early at home. And so this is really the fundamental problem, is that our agencies have fallen flat on addressing outpatients with COVID-19. So myself and people in my groups, the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons, stepped in big early on, fully support early treatment. Then came Frontline Critical Care Consortium, then American Frontline Doctors, and then finally the Truth for Health Foundation. So listen, there are 4 organizations. They fully support early treatment. Early treatment involves starting in the nose, starting in the nose. It's not a hand infection. Everybody should know. And people are putting hand sanitizer on like it's a hand infection. Do you know people have, there have been scenes in Europe where they're spraying the sidewalk. It's not a sidewalk infection. People were spraying stadium seats. It's not a stadium seat infection. It's an infection in the nose. So we actually have to decontaminate the nose. I hate to be so common sense approach, but this has to be done. So now there's 9 studies showing thousands of patients that if we actually use a povidone iodine or hydrolute that actually kills the virus in the nose, we can markedly reduce the incidence of infections and reduce the spread, and then reduce the severity of symptoms. This really matters. The lead compound is povidone iodine or betadine, the brown iodine solution. It's available on Amazon, I think, for $5, probably no more than $10. Buy a bottle of it. And then you take 1/2 teaspoon, put it in a shot glass, and put a 1.5 ounces of water in a shot glass, and then take a bulb syringe or a spray bottle, spray it up the nose, sniff it back, and spit it out the throat. That's what does it. Do it twice on each side. Do it twice a day for prevention, particularly after you go out, go to parties. I know people like you, Atero, you probably go out and have a good time as a young person. When you come home, make sure you do that, because you could have the virus in your nose. Now, in acute treatment, like right now, I have scads of people in their 70s and 80s. I have them do it every 4 hours. And so that zaps the source of the fever right at the source. The source is in the nose. And people all want to take pills. The first thing they ask is, where can I take a pill? I said, listen, the problem is in the nose. Zap the nose. And I learned about this late. I had COVID-19 myself last year in 2020. It literally baked in my nose for 3 days. I didn't do anything. I was so stupid. And then it invaded my lungs. No wonder, because I didn't do anything. And so what I learned through these randomized trials, and they most of them broke in 2021, to be fair, is that we must zap it early in the nose. Must. And so everybody must do this. Everything else is secondary to actually treating it in the nose. Everybody wants to get into vitamin D or supplements. Those are fine. Sure, we recommend zinc, vitamin D, vitamin C, quercetin, and over-the-counter an acid called famotidine impairs viral replication. But if we had those six things and we focused on decontamination in the nose, we'd be in great shape. Beyond that, we've heard about President Trump getting Regeneron monoclonal antibodies, the senior, Governor Abbott, the vaccines didn't work for him. He was saved by a monoclonal antibody infusion. Podcaster Joe Rogan, I went 15 rounds with him in the man cave, and he told me about getting Regeneron. Aaron Rodgers, who apparently mentioned me on his podcast, and I missed it because I was on with you guys, but Aaron received monoclonal antibodies. That's called the McCullough Protocol. That is leading off with this idea that we start to do things in sequence. And then after that, it's pretty easy. We can use, if we can't use monoclonal antibodies, we use hydroxychloroquine, supported by over 300 studies, about a 25% impact. Ivermectin, supported by over 60 studies, but over a 70% impact. We don't have favipiravir in the United States, but they use it in Russia and in Japan. We're going to have the Pfizer drug, combination of a kinase-like 3 inhibitor plus ritonavir, an older protease inhibitor, about 80% impact. And then the Merck drug looks pretty weak, molnupiravir, seems to be like favipiravir, 30% impact. We use those combined with azithromycin, doxycycline. We use inhaled budesonide throughout, randomized trial, stoic trial, 80% reduction in risk of hospitalization. We use oral colchicine throughout, about a 25% risk reduction in hospitalization and also in mortality. And then we use oral prednisone on day 5 for pulmonary symptoms, aspirin all the way throughout because of the blood thinning effect, 325 milligrams. High-risk patients, nursing home patients, people in wheelchairs, people immobilized, I use blood thinners right away. Don't let the blood clots even form. We use injectable Lovenox or oral blood thinners. This is called sequence multi-drug therapy for COVID-19. It's the state of the art. There can be additional things added or subtracted. But I'm telling you, this approach applied to people over age 50 with medical problems, over 65 and everybody, would basically reduce the risk of hospitalization and death by at least 85%. And I've given that under sworn testimony. I think now with the better drugs, honestly, we could probably prevent over 95% of hospitalization. It should be a rare person who gets hospitalized, you know, after they receive very comprehensive outpatient treatment. The treatment always pulls people through.
Well, doctor, there's so many different ways I want to follow up with it. The obvious, I just have to say it out loud, it's criminal that we aren't doing this. You have saved lives. You have helped me help other people save their life. I have a dear friend. I'm not going to say his name. He's in the ministry. He suffers from a muscular condition. He's over 500 pounds, does not have use of lung function. Let's just say he wouldn't be able to walk across the room like you and I would. He got COVID, called me up. I put him on the McCullough protocol or the Joe Rogan routine, whatever it is. Blood oxygen level never went below 96. No hospitalization necessary. We did get him in for monoclonal earlier than some might have recommended just because of his condition, but unvaccinated and the protocol worked. So I want to focus on one thing you mentioned because you said it quickly and we have some new listeners and we have some listeners that are just beginning to get exposed to this doctor because you've been in this since the very beginning. And some of this we kind of get so used to saying we act as if everyone's heard it. Just be very specific about the cleaning of the nose protocol, because that is new for some people to hear.
Okay, we clean the nose with what's called virucidal treatment. Now, that's povidone iodine, also known as betadine. It comes in a bottle. It's a brown iodine solution. It always comes in a 10% solution, which is standard. So look for betadine. That's the brand name of it, povidone iodine. And then you take a half a teaspoon of that. Mix it in a shot glass of water, 1.5 ounces, and then take a bulb syringe or a spray bottle and spray it way up in the nose. And you got to sniff it back and choke on it a little bit and then spit it out. That actually washes the back of the nose. That kills the virus on contact. You'll actually see the fever go down. It really cleans out the sinuses, and it works for other colds and sinus infections. I tell you, I'm not going to ever suffer with a cold again now that I've learned this. You know, sinus doctors have been doing this for years. Once I started talking to dentists and sinus doctors, I go, yeah, we've been doing this forever. I go, what? They said, yeah, and now it turns out the studies are clear. There's a meta-analysis by Chopra, randomized trial by Chowdhury. It's clear it works. It's unequivocal that it works. And the bottom line is we can kill the virus at its source. We know with the Omicron variant, it's multiplying 70 times faster than Delta. We're talking a massive explosion in the nose. That's where the fever is coming from. Even if there's not much nasal congestion, hit it up in the nose. It really works.
That's very helpful. Thank you, doctor. So I want to go just kind of piggyback off the end of your previous comment where you talk about all these treatments and the reduction of hospitalizations that could have been. I'm going to ask you a difficult question. Why is this not being done then? If it's so obvious, if the science is overwhelming, which it is, and I've seen this anecdotally and personally, I'm far from, you know, a clinical scientist or doctor, but I'm also not an idiot, and I could see this stuff happening in real time. Why is it that we are still going through this process of, oh, if your symptoms get bad enough, come to the hospital, we'll stick you in the corner, put you on a ventilator, and hope things get better? Why aren't we doing this?
Well, we went through this exercise in the historic U.S. Senate testimony, November 19th of 2020. So it's earlier in the pandemic. I was the lead witness. Americans saw this firsthand, where basically the minority witness played an academic game. And the game is called, you don't have enough evidence. So anything that we proposed, oh, let's try hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, and we looked at the studies, the evidence was, the answer was, well, you know, the evidence isn't good enough, that you have to do better. You know, we need bigger studies. We need more confidence. And so it's a game that we play. And sure, we'd always love more evidence. Now, if the countries did 40,000 patient trials like they did the vaccine trials, we obviously could do anywhere from 30,000 to 45,000 patient trials with vaccines. If we could do those trials and would have done those trials with drugs in combination early on, we would have the evidence that those who say we need it, we would have it. But right now, I can tell you, I published the lead papers on this. I said, listen, we can't wait for these studies. We don't know if these guys are going to get off the dime or not. We have to react on what's called the precautionary principle. This is a mass casualty event. People are dying. We have to take action now. We can't wait for those who say we need more evidence. We look for signals of benefit, acceptable safety, put drugs into combination, and we're humble and said, you know what? We'll refine our approach if we see new signals coming in the future. And we've published two papers on this. Others have published their protocols. America should be reassured that Dr. Pierre Corey and Paul Merrick, very well-respected critical care doctors, they independently came up with the Math Plus and IMath protocols independently of McCullough and my group over here. We weren't communicating, and we arrived at the same principles. Didier Rialt in France and Vladimir Zelenko, Monroe, New York, they arrived at the same principles. Eugenia Barrentos and Sankara Chetty down in South America and South Africa, respectively, they arrived at the same principles. So what I'm telling you is we're on the right track. Our public health agencies, I think, are running now well over a year behind in the data. So either they know it can be treated and they're intentionally ignoring it, or they don't know. We can't possibly know. Scott Atlas, in his most recent book about the pandemic response, he thinks they don't know. He thinks they're just incompetent. At the top. So, and, you know, he thinks they have good intentions. They just can't stay on top of the data. They're not America's A-team when it comes to science and data.
I believe in being healthy and staying active, whether that means working out or playing sports. The last thing I want to be held back in any way, I'm sure you feel the same. So when aches and pains start to creep in, what do you have to keep them from taking you out of the game? Charlie Kirk here. If you haven't tried Relief Factor, I highly recommend that you do. I've seen firsthand what it can do, and I've heard even more stories from satisfied customers about how Relief Factor helped their body fight off aches and pains. That seems a worthy try to me. But 70% of the more than 500,000 people who have tried Relief Factor end up ordering more, and that's because it works for them the way it worked for me. Isn't it time for you to get out of pain? Relief Factor at ReliefFactor.com is your first step to becoming pain-free, and just might be to order the 3-week quick start for the discounted price of only $19.95. Just go to relieffactor.com or call 800-4-RELIEF to find out more about this offer. Feel the difference. 100% drug-free supplement. ReliefFactor.com. That is ReliefFactor.com. Discounted to the price of only $19.95 or call 800-4-RELIEF to find out more about this offer. Feel the difference. ReliefFactor.com. Yeah, I'm smiling and laughing because, you know, I never went to college. I'm 28 years old and host a podcast. And for whatever reason, you know, just using regular reasoning given to me from the Lord, I could say, oh, yeah, that person in my family that did vitamin D supplements and got monoclonal did well. And that person that went to the hospital way too early died. Like, I don't know if it's really that. I think you're being nice and I appreciate the attempt at diplomacy because I actually want to believe our leaders are incompetent. I pray they're incompetent because if they're malevolent, it's a completely different conclusion you come to, right? I mean, it would.
Well, yeah, you know, there's a legal standard, and that is, you know, if we are going after them, is that they knew or they should have known, and either one of those is bad. So it's either they knew that all this early treatment was going on, they knew that these societies had formed, they knew that these protocols were, they knew the telemedicine services were going on, they knew the drugs were being used in combination, or they should have known it. But the bottom line is the early treatment movement left. I mean, the ship has sailed and Americans have received early treatment. And it's sad that there's our patients hospitalized today who die today without early treatment. But, you know, we were scheduled to have 2.1 million Americans die with COVID-19. It's rounded off at about 800,000. And then what we learned in the 800,000 is that about 90% of them died really driven by other comorbidities in a large extent. And so it was only 10% of that really died where COVID-19 was the lead and the primary cause of death. So we're really down to about 60,000 deaths with COVID-19. And we still think those could have been prevented with early treatment and certainly the comorbid. But it's far less than 2.1 million. I think the early treatment made a huge impact.
I agree. And I think your advocacy and Dr. Malone and getting on Joe Rogan and empowering people, it's been promising. I'm still very upset with our public health officials because I deal in my own orbit of people that still worship at the state, the defeat of Fauci, and that no matter what they say, they'll do. So I want to ask you a question here. United States, according to the news, reports more than 325,000 new COVID cases, the highest single day increase during the entire pandemic. We are also saying that we're the most vaccinated we've been. Do you think there's a correlation between a potential leaky vaccine and higher transmission or the virus kind of continuing to be spread? Is there a correlation between the two?
Well, our public health officials announced this summer that the vaccines were not stopping transmission of Delta. So we had a paper by Fahrenhope. We had one by Venkata Krishnan. We had a wedding in Houston where they're all vaccinated. They spread it. A cruise vessel from the military in the UK, they spread it. Now we have countless examples, cruise ships, military vessels, lockdown groups of people, and they spread COVID to one another fully vaccinated. I think everyone should know the vaccines don't stop people from spreading COVID-19. That should be obvious to everyone. So with that backdrop, we now have data from the United States, from Denmark, and from South Africa, all showing with Omicron, the most recent variant, over 70% are fully vaccinated. Wow. Omicron and what we're seeing right now, of those record numbers of cases, it must be driven by the fully vaccinated. We have 200 million Americans in the United States who have taken the vaccine. The CDC says as of October that we have 146 million Americans that have already had COVID. There's only 330 million Americans in the country. So there's nowhere to go. You can't say it's a problem of the unvaccinated anymore. It's clearly driven by the vaccinated.
So according to the New York Times, it says that the likelihood of dying from COVID is much higher if you are unvaccinated. Now, you ask, well, what about whether or not they got monoclonal antibodies or not? Is there any evidence to show that this vaccine, we know it doesn't prevent you from getting the virus, which the vaccine is supposed to do. Is there any evidence to show that it's an effective treatment?
Well, there's two papers to review on that. One is by 1040 and colleagues, 1040, published in JAMA. Now, they demonstrated when they got into patients that they really knew what was going on in the hospital, vaccinated, unvaccinated, they're admitted for COVID. They're not admitted for other stuff. They're admitted for COVID. We know that that the vaccines were associated with about a 59% reduction in progression of disease. That means people getting sicker and sicker, going on the ventilator, and that the mortality among those fully vaccinated was between 6 and 7%. And the mortality in those unvaccinated in the hospital with COVID-19 was between 8 and 9%. So it was better for the vaccinated, but it wasn't a huge difference. And then we have the CONE data from the VA. And from the VA, they have over 700,000 patients. So this is a huge sample size. And when we look at survival, so the inverse of mortality, over age 65, there was a 12-point difference in survival among those who were positive for COVID-19. 12 points. But under 65, 1 point difference. One.
Wow.
So I think when people are talking about mandates and people like you and me, we're talking about vaccines, we're thinking about people under 65. I'm telling you, under age 65, the best data that we have, there is a 1% absolute survival benefit.
Yeah,
that's
it. And I also, and you made this point early on, which is the most important point, which is, and it's that it's you know, you could hear a 10th grader say this. Well, it's apples to oranges. It kind of is, because the question is, do you have a vaccinated person, unvaccinated person that was that had early intervention, monoclonal antibodies, and the regimen? That's the question, right? I mean, the question is, does the vaccine help versus an unvaccinated person with the McCullough treatment?
That's a good point. In all these analyses, they never take into consideration whether they got early treatment.
That's right.
I mean, I'd have to assume they didn't, but I've been asked, listen, I go on, I'm a frequent contributor to Fox News. I was on last night with Sean Duffy, who's a former congressman, but I usually go on with Laura Ingraham. And Laura's asked me a million times, Dr. McCullough, is this a more serious strain? I said, what dictates whether or not it's serious is whether or not they got early treatment. What's the risk of hospitalization? It depends. Did they get treated or not? The viral strain itself and the vaccine that people received is really nothing in comparison to the impact of early treatment.
Yeah, and so you're comparing something that's completely, in a lot of ways, irrelevant. Doctor, you've been very vocal about the potential downside of these vaccines. I have as well. For years, people used to come up to me at events with these binders full of information saying that I have to get more read up on vaccines. And these are mostly mothers that claim that their children had adverse events to the vaccine of autism or whatever. And I never really took it very, I wouldn't say seriously, I just was never that interested in it. I have been very interested, though, in this particular vaccine and adverse events to it. We just had an event in Phoenix, Arizona with over 10,000 people. And I asked the audience how many people in the room know somebody personally that has had a very serious adverse event to this vaccine. Almost every single hand went up. And I said, how many of you know someone who has had, who knows someone who has died from the vaccine? Almost half the hands went up, doctor, in a room of 10,000 people, not reported by the media, not reported by the press. Talk, just the floor is yours. Talk about this vaccine and talk about how careful people should be as far as giving this vaccine, especially to children, but the potential damage this vaccine could be doing to our general citizenry.
If we had proper safety oversight over the vaccine program, it would have been shut down in February, because in February we had 182 deaths by January 22nd. We were over the line. There shouldn't be more than 150 deaths for all the vaccines combined in the United States per year. So we already had too many deaths. There's only 27 million people vaccinated. So in February, without shutting it down, we could predict that we would have a catastrophe if we'd go all the way up and vaccinate 200 million people. And that's what we have. We have a biological catastrophe on our hands. The current numbers, and we should be very exact on this, through the CDC VAERS system. And this is these are basically certified permanent numbers in the VAERS database. We get a weekly update. About half of these are domestic, half of these reported through the U.S. reporting system elsewhere, in Caribbean and other places. But these are human lives that are lost. What the CDC is telling us, certified, 20,622 deaths as of December 17th, you know, a total of 983,756 safety reports, over 350 hospitalizations or ER visits. People have been seriously damaged, been put in the hospital. 12,317 cases of Bell's palsy, paralysis of the face. We've had 20,560 cases of myocarditis, pericarditis. The FDA says this occurs with Pfizer and Moderna and young people, is against it. Shockingly, 34,615 individuals permanently disabled of the severe allergic reactions, life-threatening, and anaphylaxis. Now, we have gone past 63,000 of these severe reactions. These numbers are stunning. They have far exceeded any safety boundaries for any product ever used in the history of mankind.
And they continue to mandate them for children as well. And I'm not going to get into the whole intentions thing. We danced around that earlier. What are some of the long-term consequences that we're going to see? You just listed that off. I think some of those numbers could potentially be low. I mean, this could end up being
let's talk about low for a second. People said, okay, these are just voluntarily reported. We know from a paper by Meisner and colleagues published in Pediatrics a few years ago, 86% of those reports are done by doctors, nurses, coroners, paramedics, healthcare workers, the drug companies, people who think the vaccine caused it, 86% of the time. So that's important. These are filled out under threat of imprisonment or federal fines if they're falsified. I mean, I tell you, this is a serious reporting thing. Then they get a temporary number, and then the CDC finds out if this really happened. Were they really hospitalized? Did they really die? And then the CDC verifies it and gives a permanent number. I'm telling you, these numbers are tight, and they represent a low number. So this summer, a lawsuit was filed by lead attorney Tom Renz. This is public information, using a CDC whistleblower. I'm sorry, a CMS whistleblower, who had data in CMS about who took the vaccine and who died in a tight time window. And the estimates there were from the country by extrapolation, 45,000 Americans had died by early summer. And this was put to the United States in a lawsuit. And so the understanding would be that this could be an underreporting relationship of about five. So the thought is, well, maybe COVID-19 is a bit more of something that's on people's minds, so they're more likely to report it. And then this paper hit recently from Colombia. Panta Zatos is the first author, and they have data from February to August of 2021. And listen to this estimate of death, where they basically have said, by a temporal relationship, that these are vaccine-associated deaths. The number is 146 to 187 thousand individuals in this independent report from Colombia using census and vaccine record data. I can tell you, it's not surprising to me when you ask in a big crowd who knows somebody who's died of the vaccine. These numbers actually are cohesive. They corroborate one another. This is worse than a war. This is worse than a war. I don't see how the medical establishment is going to possibly say they're sorry to Americans after this. This vaccine program with this mortality rate and this permanent disability rate and the fact that cases are surging, it's obvious the vaccines have completely failed at stopping COVID-19. We have record numbers of cases right now. We've had more cases and deaths since the start of the vaccine program than before we had vaccines. We were better off before we had vaccines.
You have homeowners insurance for a good reason. Charlie Kirk here, because without it, a fire, flood, or burglary could destroy you financially. But there's another major crime your homeowner's policy does not cover. It's called home title fraud. The FBI calls title fraud one of the fastest growing crimes, and it can ruin you financially, which is why you need Home Title Lock. Title fraud happens when a criminal forges your signature on documents stating you sold your home to him. Then he takes out loans against your home and leaves with the payments. You'll spend a fortune in legal fees trying to prove you didn't commit fraud. Home Title Lock puts a barrier around your home's title the instant they detect anyone, from a cyber thief to a renter to a relative trying to forge their way to your home's title. They help shut it down. Go to HomeTitleLock.com and register your address now to see if you're already a victim. It's a very important service. Make sure your home is not being stolen without your knowledge. HomeTitleLock.com, promo code radio for 30 free days of protection. HomeTitleLock.com, promo code radio. HomeTitleLock.com, promo code radio. And one would assume that there's a correlation between the two, and that's hard to prove. There's a website called healthfeedback.org. They listen to your Joe Rogan interview that's been listened to by over 40 million people, by the way. Congratulations. The second most popular Joe Rogan interview ever is what I'm told. It's spectacular and it's good for humanity. It really is. And you were so good in that interview. They did their best to try to discredit you, and they did an awful job of it. I don't know if you saw this website or not, but they had some smart aleck go through your interview. And they try to say, here's all the inaccurate claims. I want to read one of them, and I want you to expand upon it. It's not inaccurate. It isn't. Which you said in the interview with Joe Rogan, you said, quote, you said, when you talk about an antiviral monoclonal antibody, it's a wonderful advance. We've never had this before as far as treating COVID. They said this was inaccurate. In addition, you said, we now know that the spike protein after these vaccines is produced in the body for an uncontrolled quantity, uncontrolled duration of time. A paper by Ogata, colleagues from Harvard, which shows the free-floating spike protein. So that spike protein in the plasma. Talk about spike proteins and talk about why that makes this particular vaccine different.
So the spike protein is the dangerous part of the virus that was actually manipulated in the lab of Wuhan, China, with what's called gain-of-function research, particularly at the furin cleavage joint, the hinge between the S1 outer segment, which binds to human cells, and the S2 segment that anchors it into the viral nucleocapsid. The spike protein is 1,200 amino acids. It has multiple glycosylation side chains, and it is by design. It's a lethal weapon. Now it's been shown in multiple studies. It damages cells. It causes inflammation. It damages organs, including the brain. It damages the heart. Paper by Avolio showed this heart muscle damage in the pericytes. Causes blood clotting, endothelial damage, and blood clotting. Paper by Zhang and colleagues, which I'm a co-author on. I'm telling you, this is tight. The spike protein unequivocally causes damage in the human body. Ogata showed after the first injection of messenger RNA, it's basically easily measurable for 14 days, but one individual actually was measurable out to 29 days. Wow. I can tell you, with COVID-19, the respiratory illness, with active treatment, we can clear the PCR within 4 days. We don't have 2 weeks of spike protein exposure systemically in well-treated patients. This is scary that this happens after the vaccine. It's all factual. It's all highly cited. These fact-checking organizations, including this one, by the way, they've been fact-checked themselves, and they go right back to the vaccine stakeholders.
Well, that's exactly right.
So what you're saying is the vaccine stakeholders are reading every word I said, and I'm glad they're reading it. And because they're amplifying and highlighting these important analytic points. So, their goal is to try to discredit the information, but instead it's working against them because we know that, they are a window to the vaccine stakeholders, which include actually the U.S. government, Pfizer, Moderna, Johnson & Johnson, AstraZeneca, the Gates Foundation, Rockefeller Foundation, Gavi, CEPI, World Health Organization. We know who they represent. So, that is what we call the vaccine stakeholders. I call them stakeholders. People will call them the cabal, the consortium. There is a group of, very powerful, well-integrated, coordinated individuals who want to see the entire world vaccinated at very high frequencies. We're not talking about a one-time shot. We're talking about frequencies. Now, today it hit the wires that boosters may last only 10 weeks. So we're looking at very, very tight frequencies of repeated genetic injections, which code for the production of the spike protein. Now in a paper by Patterson, a second one by Banzel, suggesting that the spike protein probably lasts in the human body for over a year per injection. So now if we start injecting every 3 months or 6 months, there will be a progressive accumulation of this disease-causing protein in critical organs like the brain, the heart, bone marrow, and elsewhere.
Dr. Malone has been very articulate on this. And I encourage, we did an interview with everyone. You've been amazing on this topic as well. But Dr. Malone, especially on the mRNA issue,
let me give you a Malone update today. He was permanently banned for Twitter. So you want to follow up on that? And then tomorrow he's going to appear on Joe Rogan. So I can tell you, we're going to have another 3 hours. We'll see if Malone can handle 3 hours in the pit with Joe Rogan. I told him to use the restroom ahead of time. Don't drink any coffee because you got to be locked and loaded and ready to go. I went 15 rounds with Joe Rogan and we got out He's a great guy, by the way. We saw him in the lobby. His eyes were as big as saucers. He looked like he was shell-shocked. I said, it looks like he just won 15 rounds. I go, that was just the data. I literally just presented the information. There was no hyperbole, no speculation. I just presented the data. That's what America has heard. I think that's the reason why I was on the Jonathan Berry Show out of Houston today. They said we just topped Elon Musk. So I think it's number one. We'll see if
we'll see if
Malone can take it to a higher level. But yeah, that's the biggest thing that Joe Rogan's ever done, because it's the biggest issue that Americans have faced. It's not whether or not they drive a Tesla. That's not the issue. The issue is survival after COVID-19 and then how to navigate the pandemic response.
It's a big deal. You beat Elon Musk in the podcast charts. You know this. Joe Rogan is the number one podcaster on the planet. And, you know, you reached more than 60 Minutes, CNN, you know, Hollywood, everything combined. And so congratulations. That's well earned. And you're right. This is the number one issue facing humanity and Americans. We've been told things that are patently untrue and the opposite of the truth. And people are now searching for a higher frequency. They want to get towards truth, even if it might be contrary to what they've been told. Okay, so I want to ask you a couple more questions here, and they're going to be kind of a little bit all over the place, but I've listened to hours of your content. So I want to ask you this question. Should doctors who knowingly violated their Hippocratic Oath and refused to prescribe early treatments be subject to some form of criminal prosecution and or be called before Nuremberg? And then can you expand on the Nuremberg Code? Because there's been a lot of online chatter about that. You've talked about it. So that's a two-part question.
Okay, Nuremberg Code actually has to do with errors of commission. So the Nuremberg Code came out of Nazi Germany, where Nazi doctors, actually German doctors, were co-opted by the government and actually under pressure and coercion and threat of reprisal, they basically forced German citizens into Nazi research, which was diabolical, and horrible things happened to them. And so doctors were actually involved in this. And so in trials that happened in Nuremberg, Germany, a code was written to never let this happen again. And this applies to our vaccines. All the vaccines are researched. They're all in investigation. It says right in the consent form that you're participating in research. It says that a doctor or any other entity may never apply any pressure, coercion, or threat of reprisal to have anybody be involved in research. So that means no good doctor could ever tell a patient that they should take a COVID-19 vaccine. They can weigh out the risks and benefits, but it's the patient's own free choice. That means no employer could ever tell a patient that they have to take the vaccine. That means no president of the United States through a press briefing or through a CMS mandate elsewhere could ever do that. All of these entities have violated the Nuremberg Code. Now, you could say, well, how could we ever put somebody on trial for the Nuremberg Code? And actually, these would be trialed in international court or crimes against humanity. In fact, those charges have been filed in multiple places now. But you asked a question about errors of omission, about doctors actually not treating COVID patients. And that one goes down to standard civil law. And we do have laws related to medical malpractice. And the two most common reasons for medical malpractice is failure to diagnose and failure to treat. And we'd have to assume that, you know, the diagnosis of COVID-19 was made. People knew that there was no failure in diagnosing a patient. Now the issue is, did they fail to treat them? And the criteria that's held is what's called community standard of care. So if a jury, or if it was a bench trial, a judge, if they consider the community standard of care is some form of treatment that the treatment organizations had. And the very first home treatment guide was published by the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons in October of 2020. I'd imagine from October 2020 forward, there could be a case for medical malpractice. Before that time, people would say, listen, it was just too formative. There was nothing established. There weren't any guides or protocols. There was no societies behind it. But the standard is not how many randomized trials or you know, the NIH or what have you. It's actually community standards. Well, what would be considered a community standard of care? So in my community, which is the patients I serve, I've always treated them appropriately. So I would imagine I could not be sued for failure to treat. Now a doctor right next to me who never took care of a patient and just let the patients get sick, they could be at risk.
And so yeah, I hope they do get held accountable. I'm not optimistic about that. So I want to ask you about another story. We're starting to see from big news. They said the flu took a year off last year, and now the flu is back. The magical disappearance of the flu is what they call it. The current PCR test, they're saying, will be soon phased out for new tests that will try to distinguish better between flu and COVID. Bill Gates bought big shares of a new testing company. Can you talk a little bit about this? We get a ton of questions about this on our program as it relates to the flu and the COVID virus. What's the truth behind all this?
Okay, well, let's just take the flu test first. The flu test is a PCR test. The flu test always could pick up the flu. Okay, so we got that. There's a whole bunch of, you know, either multiplex testing or single flu testing. That's good enough. Now, the original COVID PCR test, polymerase chain reaction test, the original methods came from the CDC because companies didn't know COVID-19 was coming. So the laboratory-derived assays that all the health systems and hospitals did, and they all had to apply for their own EUAs. It was very burdensome for every hospital to do this. We got 5,600 hospitals in the United States. They basically used the CDC methodology, and they emulated that. And so for a period of time during the pandemic, for variable periods of time, hospitals actually relied on the CDC methodology. Now, almost all the departments of community health, to my knowledge, relied on the CDC methodology. What happened was over time, you know, we got Quest and LabCorp, the big labs, they moved in, they got their own PCR test, they got their own approval for the PCR test, their own methods, and those PCR tests, my understanding, is secure. So probably the vast majority of Americans who went to an urgent care and they got a PCR test through, you know, Quest or LabCorp or Abbott, what have you, they're fine. But all the people went to the city testing centers, those who had the diagnosis arrived at the hospital. It's possible that their CDC test, which now the CDC has told us, it couldn't tell between flu and COVID. So you can imagine, and this would be worrisome. Can you imagine a senior citizen is at a nursing home, they get sick, they go to the local hospital, they get a swab, and it says COVID. Well, if nobody thought to check a separate flu test and really diagnose the flu, they would have been diagnosed with COVID. And chances are it would have been isolated, would have been admitted, maybe received remdesivir or dexamethasone, barcinitib or tocilizumab. They would have gotten a lot of treatments that would be inappropriate, potentially harmful, and the whole time misdiagnosed flu for COVID. And so, this is possibly went on. I had a conversation regarding Scott Atlas, and you should bring him on. He's got a different view. He's analyzed this. He doesn't think this happened at all because influenza went down everywhere in the world. And he said it couldn't be due to the CDC test that explains this, that the worldwide reduction in flu was something else. I'm not so sure, but it's uncanny. You know, in 2017, we had about 72,000 flu deaths in the United States. And people with influenza, they die of secondary staphylococcal pneumonias or streptococcal pneumonias in general. It's a different death pattern, but it affects our seniors. So, if those 70,000 deaths, the flu deaths, in a sense, became COVID deaths, and we know that of COVID deaths, 90% of them had significant comorbidities, of which the flu deaths would as well. We're still down to attribution of who really died of COVID, a much smaller number, maybe less than 100,000. It's hard to know. I take the bigger number just because, 800,000, that's what we have to work with. And when I testified under oath, November 19th of 2020, I said 50% of those deaths by that time period could have been spared with early treatment. And then Texas Senate testimony, again, I'm under oath. I put that number as of March 10th of 2021, up to 85% of the deaths could have been spared. I have some additional Senate testimony coming up next month, and I'm likely to come in at about 95% of people could have been spared with early treatment. And I can tell you that those are big numbers. Historians will record. And I think every doctor, every hospital and every clinic better be able to say they did their best for patients. And I can tell you, taking a senior citizen and handing them a positive test result and telling them to go home and wait till they get sick enough to where they can't breathe, that's not good enough. And that's far from being good enough. And many in the future probably will say that was malpractice. That was failure.
Look, everyone out there has been asking me, Charlie, how do I get more pillows? Well, that's MyPillow.com. And it's promo code Charlie, actually. It's a great special. And MyPillow doesn't have their box stores anymore, so we got to help them out. And part of them being canceled, they want to give you the lowest price yet. So you can get the lowest price in the history of MyPillow for their classic standard MyPillow regularly, $69.98. Now only $19.98 with the promo code. They also have queen size, regularly $79.98, and $24.98 with a promo code. Or king size, usually $89.98, only $29.98 with your promo code. MyPillow is not just pillows. They have over 150 products, everything from sleepwear to new beds. The promo code Kirk also works on my store and frankspeech.com. Go to MyPillow.com or call 800-875-0425 and use promo code Kirk to take advantage of Mike's special offer on his standard MyPillow. That's MyPillow.com, promo code Kirk, or call 800-875-0425. MyPillow.com, promo code Kirk. MyPillow.com, promo code Kirk. It's criminal, and it's evil. And, I mean, I go to here in Scottsdale for IVs. I like it a lot. And the people that do the IVs, they also work at the hospitals. And I just ask them a very basic question. This is far from the McCullough treatment or regimen, but I said, hey, at your hospitals, do you guys give a vitamin D booster shot when you get a COVID positive patient? Oh, no, we don't have vitamin D in our hospital. Oh, really? Just like that. Let's just start with that, right, doctor? I mean, forget all the other stuff. I said, wait, what do you mean you don't? They said, yeah, we don't have, you know, because vitamin D, you can't do it intravenously. It has to be fat. It's fat soluble. I said, you're trying to tell me that you don't give. So you have basically, you have 80-year-olds where vitamin D levels are like 4, right? So bad. You know, they don't get outside much. And the one thing that could potentially help them could, it's not a silver bullet, but there is a correlation with higher vitamin D levels and the ability to survive the cytokine storm. And they say, no, we don't do that. I said, well, that's interesting. You know, and so then I asked another person, a politician who is supposed to be on my side but isn't. And I said, why is it that the Arizona Department of Health has not run one advertisement that I've heard advertising where the monoclonal antibody treatment centers are in Arizona? Right, doctor?
You know, that's a great point. You know, when we call up CVS and Walgreens, we always have to go for this phone tree about if you want a COVID-19 vaccine. And I can tell you, you know, people haven't wanted vaccines since April. The rates of interest in vaccination are zero. Nobody wants these vaccines. In fact, these have been on the answering machine since October of last year, even before the vaccines were approved. They were pre-advertising the vaccines, which violates the law. Actually, can't do that. But instead, every day, my phone has been blowing up today with requests on how do I get monoclonal antibodies? How do I get early treatment? What do I do next? Blowing up every day. We think we have 500 doctors taking care of the whole nation. And patients have lost trust in their doctors. They've lost trust in their healthcare system.
So fascinating. 500 doctors taking care of the whole nation. You're right. And I want to say again, doctor, we get emails from people. Dr. McCullough saved my life. You know, zinc, azithromycin, whatever the regimen is, right? And I could list it off the top of my head. You did it earlier in the show. But you put enough of these things with early intervention, your odds are going to increase at every point of early intervention, right? It's all a matter of especially of playing the odds and depending on your age and comorbidities and, you know, any other underlying health factors. But doctor, can you talk about that? 500 doctors? That's fascinating. Yeah,
well, the American Association of Physicians and Surgeons, they keep a roster and they expand it, you know, once a month. And there's a way to sign up. You know, doctors can go online and say, yeah, I treat COVID patients. Can you list me so people can find me? And it's numbers roughly 500. Now, this is extraordinary. That means there's 1 million doctors in the United States that are basically sitting on the sidelines. We got 500,000 nurse practitioners and PAs. You know, what are they doing? I mean, we're flooded with patients. I mean, we have an enormous need. And you could look at it and say, listen, what if I'm wrong? What if I'm wrong? I've basically advised people on some vitamins and supplements, some treatments in the nose, and some prescription things that really don't work. That I've basically overtreated some patients for a potentially fatal disease. You know what? I'd probably do that over and over again. I'm going to give my best shot to try to help somebody. I don't think anybody could criticize me for using monoclonal antibodies. I mean, come on, the FDA approves these. These are emergency use authorized. These are randomized trials published in the best journals. How could I possibly be criticized for advocating monoclonal antibodies? Okay, so if I'm wrong, then I was wrong in using monoclonal antibodies. I was wrong in these assistive drugs. And if I'm wrong about the vaccines, then I was overly concerned over perfectly safe and effective vaccines. I was just overly concerned. But Charlie, what if I'm right? What if I am right? Think about the implications of a massive number of people worldwide who could have been saved with early treatments, and now a massive number of people who have died, have been injured, have been harmed with these vaccines. What if I'm right? You can see the gravitas,
yes,
the
yes.
gravity scales here, right? You know, if I'm right, I'm right on, I think, one of the absolute biggest colossal issues of modern human times, if I'm right.
Well, the species. And it's interesting. So I'm a big fan of C.S. Lewis, and he has this portion of Mere Christianity where he talks about atheism versus Christianity. And he says, in order to be a Christian, you don't have to believe every part of the Bible, but in order to be an atheist, you have to believe none of it. And so basically the odds, you know, that he phrases in Mere Christianity is basically you must dismiss the whole body of the metaphysical, you know, inquiry. Or you could say, yeah, you know, I believe in Jesus. I believe in the Bible. I'm still wrestling through some of this other stuff. And the point is that in order for the people that oppose you to be right, you must be wrong about every treatment. You must be wrong about every intervention. It's impossible. It's an insane argument.
You know, Charlie, I'm humble. And I got to tell you what, you know, I read the data. And I was looking at this pandemic, you know, day by day. I've reviewed thousands of reports. And I told Americans for months that natural immunity was a robust, complete, and durable. It's one in one. And I went, you know, it was one and done. And when the data broke on Omicron, I was the first to get out and tell America, listen, for the first time, natural immunity is failing and Omicron is breaking through. What does that tell you? That tells you intellectual honesty. And intellectual honesty means that one is able to adapt to the data and be honest in the interpretation. I didn't double and triple down on this and say, yeah, natural immunity is holding out forever. Are you kidding me? In a heartbeat, when I became convinced, and it was clear and convincing evidence, I quickly told America, that's the most responsible thing I can do as a doctor in a position of authority. Can you imagine those who are doubling and tripling down on the vaccines right now? As Omicron is just pouring into the vaccinated population, is there, you know, the absence of intellectual honesty, the absence of humility, of understanding that we're dealing with something that's far beyond our abilities to control. I think historians are going to write a lot about this, and you're making history with this really insightful, really series of investigations that you've done.
So in closing here, I want to ask you just about some personal – just like a personal question. I mean, you've dedicated your life to being a doctor. You're very well-respected. And you a couple years ago, you couldn't have imagined have been the most downloaded podcast of the top podcaster on the planet, right? Just not to build up your ego a little bit, doctor. But Joe Rogan has some people that are a big deal that come on his podcast. I'm talking about people that like hold their breath for like half an hour underwater, okay? Or he has Kevin Hart or comedians or the richest man on the planet or Elon Musk. You've beat them all, right? The doctor who looks at data and is willing to talk about it. I first just want to ask, what is that like for you personally? Like, how are you processing that? You're the most popular person on the podcast space ever.
You know, before this, I was a regular doctor, but I was pretty high up in my field. Like you pointed out, I was president of a medical society. I'm a, you know, a textbook editor. I had testified with the Congressional Oversight Panel in 2007. I was on C-SPAN for hours. So I had actually kind of already been out there, you know, endowed lecturer at Harvard, New York Academy of Sciences. I've kind of done a lot. But, you know, I have to tell you that in the last 2 years, it's been extraordinary. You know, who's one of my friends who's been to my house is Eric Clapton. Eric's a good guy. He reached out to me, wanted to meet me, wanted to meet my wife. My wife told him, you know, she's a great cook. And we invited him over and I met Eric's personal physician, Dermot O'Flynn's a great guy and his personal assistant. And went to practice sessions and I've met movie stars and all different types of people. You know, early on in the Trump administration, Peter Navarro gave me a ring and I helped, you know, advise and trying to help people in the White House get through the pandemic, help with pandemic response as I could. You know, I've had lots of contact with state senators. I'd love to help out the current administration. I'm kind of a middle of the road voter. I'm not a hardcore right winger or left winger. I'm kind of right in the middle. And I've had a lot of people reach out to me because they can see how important this is. They can see how critical this is. And I have been very, very clear with America. I've been right on point. And people always say, aren't you worried about being attacked? I've never had anybody actually directly engage me on this. You know, the fear on the other side of knowing that that truly the approach that we're seeing is wrong. The fear is extraordinary. So, you know, a group, whoever it is, hires some fact checkers that work for some other company and they do some sniping from the side. You know, there was some threat letters that went out, general threat letters. One was from the Federation of State Medical Boards. And it said, you know, we want to take away licenses for doctors who are spreading COVID misinformation. And someone asked me about that. I said, you know what? I want them to call. I want a meeting with them. And we're going to go through a very serious public recorded review of the data on vaccine safety and efficacy and early treatment. They haven't called.
That would be a widely viewed YouTube video.
Well, listen, they haven't called, Charlie. My point is they haven't called. And neither has the American Board. And listen, I've gotten these threat letters. They always come in with no phone call, no due process, nothing. And all they've done, and I've gotten a bunch of them, all they've done is trigger a bunch of Freedom of Information Act requests and letters of intent from me to find out what's behind all this. So now they're in deep trouble. I mean, you can't imagine how much trouble people on the other side are in. I'm in zero trouble, zero. All I've tried to do is help people and help America and help the world through this. People on the other side, Charlie, are in deep water and it's getting deeper quickly.
So that'll be my final question, which is, as you've been a doctor and you articulated it wonderfully, super well-respected, what do you have to say about doctors that you kind of grew up in the profession alongside, people you went to school with, people that you had a lot of respect for? And I'm sure some doctors have been willing to open their eyes, and I'm sure some doctors have been very supportive. But I'm going to venture a guess that based on your earlier point of 500 total doctors holding up the entire country, I'm sure you've had some disappointments in your industry, in your profession. Talk a little bit about that. As someone who probably held most doctors in really high stead prior to this, how have you processed all that?
I think these doctors need a pathway back. You know, we have a million doctors. We need them. I mean, they can't all be sued for malpractice. They need a pathway back. They need, in a sense, almost an amnesty pathway back to understand that, listen, they were on the sidelines, gripped in fear, in personal fear. They're probably in massive personal fear right now with the failure of the vaccines and seeing people pour in, getting sick with COVID, fully vaccinated. But they need an amnesty pathway back. And they need an olive branch to understand that, you know, there is a concept that if you see wrongdoing going on, like people not being treated, and you sit by and do nothing, that complicity also is committing wrongdoing. And they need some pathway out of it because they, in a sense, have supported each other. You know, entire health systems have sent emails saying, don't use hydroxychloroquine, don't use ivermectin, don't treat patients. The American Medical Association has a campaign to abolish the use of ivermectin. Since when do you want to abolish the use of a generic medicine? So there's going to have to be kind of a dissolution of these horrific things. In a sense, this is almost like Nuremberg 2.0. There's going to have to be some reconciliation of this. I don't know if this is going to happen in our lifetimes or not, but you can imagine with the number of lives lost. You know, sadly, in Nazi Germany, the lives lost of Jews and non-Jews in these atrocities, and some estimates are 16 million. Right now, we're going to be hitting a million Americans worldwide. That number is going to be large, but the complicity and the loss of life of these numbers that will continue to grow is going to have to be reconciled with.
Largely preventable, unfortunately. Doctor, I want to be really respectful of your time. How can people follow you or support you
You can follow me on America Out Loud Talk Radio, the McCullough Report. For good resources, including vaccine safety, efficacy, home treatment guides, go to Truth for Health Foundation, truthforhealth.org. And then for support, legal support, travel, IT, and believe me, I need it with Malone getting permanently banned from Twitter. I am so tight on the rules right now. I have to have social media expert help. Go to GiveSendGo. GiveSendGo is a Christian crowdfunding site. It's legitimate. The only one under McCullough is me. You'll see a picture of me on stage with a big crowd. That's legitimate. I've talked to them. I've made sure that there's only one legitimate fund that can receive. All the other ones out there, by the way, are fake. So anything on GoFundMe or any of these other things that show me, those are fake funds. Somebody else is trying to make money off of my efforts with humanity. So go to GiveSendGo, GiveSendGo, GSG. It's a Christian crowdfunding site and it's legitimate, and support there is wonderful. And it's raised money. And believe me, I've already spent it all because of not only just legal, but travel, IT, et cetera. So it's well worth it.
Because, there's two of them on GiveSendGo. There's support Dr. Peter McCullough by you. Another one by Mark Brugge. Which one is it? Just so our
it's
audience.
It's one by Mark Brugge. There's one on the stage that has some green vertical lines.
Yes.
That one is just a busted account. If you notice, it's deactivated. You can't give to it.
Got it. Okay.
And I asked them, Charlie, thanks for looking. I asked for that to be taken down. And you know, I'm a doctor. I'm terrible at IT. So there's somebody working on it.
But
the one that's live with me on the stage there in the crowd, that one's legit.
Okay. So the one that says help Dr. Peter McCullough with legal IT travel costs, it's givesend.co.com/G2DR5. And it's the one of you on stage with khakis on and a blue jacket, just so our audience knows which one it is, so that they
thank you,
they could support you, and they should. Doctor, thank you so much for this. I have so many more questions, but you're a hero, you have courage, and you have saved lives, and so you will be blessed by that. So thank you
Charlie, great interview,
talk to you soon. Thanks,
bye-bye.
Thank you so much for listening, everybody. Email us your thoughts, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. if you want to support our show, you could do so by going to charliekirk.com/support. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.